Hello and welcome to Happier, a podcast that gives you strategies and tips for how to build happier habits into your daily life. This week we've got a bit of a theme. It's all about creativity. And we have a special guest, brilliant singer, songwriter, and author, Roseanne Cash. I'm Gretchen Rubin, a writer who studies happiness, good habits, and human nature. I'm in New York City, and with me is my sister, Elizabeth Kraft.
That's me, Elizabeth Kraft. I am a TV writer and producer living in LA, and Gretchen, I am often creatively challenged, so I need this episode.
And before we get started, a couple things. One is we were recently in Kansas City together, our hometown, and we shot a quick little video of ourselves in front of an outdoor, crazy outdoor sculpture at the Nelson Atkins Museum. So if you want to check that out, go to my website, GretchenRubin.com, for the podcast for episode 22. And a second thing, it's the final week of our survey call out. We want to ask you for a little favor. Here at Panoply, we're trying to learn more about our podcast listeners. We want you to tell us about the podcasts you enjoy and how often you listen to them. So we created a survey that takes just a few minutes to complete. If you fill it out, you'll help Panoply make even greater podcasts about the things you love and maybe things you didn't even know you loved. So to fill out the survey, just go to panoply.fm/survey, or you can click the link we've provided in the show notes for the episode. That's panoply.fm/survey. That's FM like old time radio. Or you can click the link in the show notes. So thanks, and we'll get started. So Elizabeth, this week our try this at home tip is to save string. And that's a metaphor which I learned from some journalism people, and it means to do things that let you save your ideas, like come up with a way to hang on to those little bits of ideas, those interesting associations, those any kind of pictures or quotations or anything that fosters your creativity. Come up with a way to save that string.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is huge for any writer, any creative person, Gretchen, not just journalists. We I have my writing partner, Sarah, and I. We try to keep a whiteboard in our office that's just a place where we write down random ideas that we may have on any given day.
Right.
And then we sort of always, you know, when we get into a space where we want to think, what might we want to create show-wise, we sort of look at our board and go through it and see if anything sparks. So it's like collecting just who knows what kind of idea where it may lead. I think it's a great idea because you never know when you're going to be inspired and you might not have time to deal with it right then.
Right. And, you know, one of the things about your whiteboard, and this seems true for the way a lot of people say string, is it's visible. Like you see a bunch of stuff. And like I know some people keep idea boards where they will post up a bunch of pictures or quotations or even just paint swatches or whatever it is. And they see them. You have those unexpected juxtapositions because you see all this stuff kind of haphazardly arranged, but sometimes that helps create ideas too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Pinterest is a sort of version of that on the computer. Yeah.
Now, I have to use the computer. For me, when I do this, I have these giant, I have a very few giant documents where I put in all my notes. And I have to type it because my handwriting, for a while I was keeping my favorite quotations by hand. But my handwriting's so bad, it's easier for me to type it. And so I have these giant troves of notes where there's no organization to it. I just put everything in there. But for me, somebody keeps telling me, oh, you should use a scanner. You know, it'd be so much more efficient. But I worry that I would keep too much if it was easy, you know, because part of this is you have to be judicious in what you pick because otherwise you just get overwhelmed. And then also for me, typing it out, it's these quotations that I love for whatever reason. And I kind of understand how they're put together better when I actually write them out myself. Somehow I understand them and remember them better.
It's like you're curating your thoughts.
Yes, exactly. But you have to be a careful curator because otherwise it's just every bit of junk that ever caught your attention.
Yeah. And the other thing I do is I get nice notebooks. Like I have my podcast notebook
and
my special, we mentioned it on the show, my special gold and white notebook.
Yes, very fancy.
Where I just collect random ideas for our podcast. I also get really nice folders from this company, Russell and Hazel. They're just pocket folders, and I have different book ideas that I want to work on. I put everything, you know, relating to one of those ideas into one of these folders, and then because they're appealing folders, I actually want to put things in them. And so I have like a book about Hawaii I've been wanting to write for, you know, 10 years. Who knows if I ever will, but if I want to, I can just go to that folder and all of my Hawaii ideas are right there.
Well, it's definitely true that good tools make work more pleasurable, like having attractive things that really serve their function. But also, I think you're exactly right. Like when the point comes where you want to make something out of it, you'll have all this stuff ready that you could never recreate.
Exactly.
You know, you can never sit down and have 10 years worth of random associations. And this is true. It's not just true if you're like, a writer for your job or something. I mean, I think people who are quilters or who are sew or who cook, certainly. I mean, the way that people who love to cook keep recipes and ingredients put together, it is. It's like curating your thoughts. That's exactly right. One of the ways that always captured my attention is Twyla Tharp, you know, the famous choreographer.
Yes.
Her method was she would get one of those boxes like you get from Office Depot to put files in. And when she would start a new dance, she would write the project name on the box, and then everything would go into that box. It could be a news clipping. It could be a video of her dancers rehearsing. It could be a toy that caught her imagination, art that inspired her. Anything would go into the box. And she said, if you want to understand me, you could do worse than starting with my boxes. And then it's like everything's tidy and put away, and you put your box in the corner where you put your boxes. It's like it's very satisfying in the way that your file folders are satisfying. It's like neat and organized, and yet all those ideas are preserved in a, you know, you're saving the string.
Yeah, you know, this reminds me of Gretchen. I read that Woody Allen, he writes a movie every year. And I read that he has a box or whatever at his desk of ideas that he comes up with, over years, little bits of dialogue or some kernel of an idea. And when he's ready to write his new movie, he'll sit down and sift through those papers and often just pick one and start writing a screenplay.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. It's just about hanging on to those little bits of string because you never know when the opportunity will come to turn them into something.
Yeah. How many good ideas have been written on the back of cocktail napkins?
Not enough.
Many bad ideas, too.
Don't lose that napkin. If you've got it, hang on to it.
If you tried this at home, saving string, let us know what metaphorical string you save.
Reach out to us on Twitter, Facebook, email us at podcast@GretchenRubin.com, or post a comment on my blog, GretchenRubin.com, and tell us how you save your string and what you do with your string.
This year, I am focused on saving and investing, but I still want to do things like travel. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering 10 times points on your spending, which means you could end up with a free flight or maybe a better hotel room.
So what could future you do with smarter financial decisions? Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Now, this week we have an interview with my friend, the brilliant singer, songwriter, and author, Roseanne Cash. Now, Roseanne has had terrific success both in songwriting and in all kinds of writing.
In music, we can't even list all of her accomplishments, which include countless hit singles and 2 gold records. So just to report on what's happened in the last few months, she just won 3 Grammy Awards for the beautiful and very personal album she released last year, The River and the Thread.
In writing, she's written fiction, essays, a children's book, a memoir. She's been published everywhere. But I have to say, my favorite is her memoir, Composed, where she talks about everything from her first childhood memories to what it was like going on the road with her legendary father, Johnny Cash, to talking about all her creative processes and her career, the highs and lows, and talking about her own children, including her youngest child, her son, Jake Leventhal. More about him in a second.
Before we begin, here's a clip of my favorite song off The River and the Thread. It's called Modern Blue.
Went to Barcelona on the midnight train. I walked the streets of Paris in the pouring rain. I flew across an
Hello, Roseanne. I'm sure everyone's wondering, hey, Gretchen, how did you become friends with someone as super cool as Roseanne Cash? And there's a very simple answer for that, because it just so happens that our children are dating. Her excellent son, Jake, is dating my daughter, Eliza. They're both 16 and go to school together. And so, Roseanne, it's so exciting to have you here on the podcast.
I'm excited about what we're going to talk about when the mics are off. Thank you.
Yeah, that's when it's really going to...
Down and dirty teenage love.
Well, everyone knows you, I think, principally because of your music. But I, Roseanne, read your memoir long before I actually met you. I had read your memoir several years before we met because I love reading memoirs of artists. Mm-hmm. And there is one passage in your book that I've never forgotten since I read it for the first time. And so as a special treat, we were going to ask you to read it. And this is you set it up so beautifully that you were 20 years old and that you had an epiphany and that there are very few days in your life where you think that something irrevocable happened. And this is your description of just sort of a moment that happened to you, and it's just haunted me ever since. So it'd be great to have you read it.
I'm happy to. Let me set it up a little bit. I was in Jamaica. My dad owned this 18th century great house in Jamaica, and his best friend John Rollins owned a house nearby. And this was the night before I moved to London by myself.
Wow.
So here's the passage you requested. Jeff and Ted Rollins, John's sons, a few years younger than I, had followed me down to the beach. They tended to follow me around a lot in Jamaica. The boys sat very quietly on the sand as I stared at the sky and listened to the waves. More than an hour went by in this reverie with the boys just waiting for me, never saying a word. I cannot remember the specifics of any epiphanies, only that I was overcome with a vague but grand sense of limitless possibility for my life and an almost painful feeling of excitement and happiness. It seems impossible now to think of being so full of feelings that were utterly unambiguous. I don't believe I have felt so strong a rush of unadulterated optimism and joy since that night. I was happy without the slightest tinge of poignancy or underlying anxiety about how my plans for the future might affect anyone else. Anything could happen to me, and whatever it might be, could only be magnificent.
Oh, I just love that. And then later on, you describe the two boys as the gargoyles guarding your dreams. It's just so beautiful. So that's from your memoir, Composed, which, as I said, I really love. But so one of the things that I think is super interesting is creative habits. Like, and so you had this moment of feeling intense possibility, but then the mission of your life becomes to turn that into creation. And you've done so much. You've accomplished so much. Are there habits that you follow or things that you've learned about yourself, about how you go about maintaining your creativity, fostering it, keeping yourself from getting so run down you can't have a new thought? Like, how do you think about that?
Yeah, well, I do let myself get so run down I can't have a new thought. But then I start to feel bad and anxious, and I know that I have to pull myself back. Uh-huh. And you know, I have five kids, so one thing I learned early on was to write something down when it occurred to me, because it was going to be lost if I didn't. and to have a lot of pens and pencils, because little children always want your pens and pencils. Yeah. So really simple things like that.
And do you have like a notebook or?
Oh, I have so many, Gretchen.
So many notebooks.
I have stacks of notebooks, and I also have tons of notes on my phone. Everywhere. And I have files of, unfinished lyrics, songs in progress. It's everywhere. I'm kind of unorganized in that way. It's all over the house, but I know where it all is.
Wait, do I remember a story from your memoir where, like, your husband, John, who you do a lot of creative work with, and we should get into that, just came across some scrap of paper and was like, this is really amazing. And you were like, oh, yeah, I kind of forgot about that.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So he's, like, going around. Like,
I left some completed lyrics just lying on the
forgotten
ping pong table, I swear. And he found them, and he said, what is this? I said, oh, I forgot I wrote that. And then he wrote the music to it.
Oh, so, but so do you think that there's often kind of a creativity that comes from sort of that unexpected juxtaposition or sort of the serendipity of stuff lying around? Like, is there kind of a method to disorganization in a way?
Well, now that you're asking about it, I realize that my creativity depends on that.
Ah.
That it helps me open my mind further if there's this, I wouldn't say chaos, but disorderliness.
Uh-huh.
Because it gives me more possibilities for juxtaposition.
Right.
Like, you know, it's all over and I'm writing something. Oh, right, I forgot. I have something else in another book that might fit in. And because it's that way rather than a single notebook and 9 to 5, it helps me.
Right.
But that's me. I wouldn't say that's right for everybody.
Well, I think that's true of just about every habit, is that it's interesting to hear what works for one particular person, because you can't then generalize, but it's useful sometimes to hear how somebody else thinks about it.
That was the most liberating concept I learned from your book.
Oh.
Because I always felt this twinge of badness about how I worked. Like, well, I should be like A.M. Holmes and sit, or you, and sit down at 9 and really work and break for lunch. I can't do it.
Right. It doesn't work for you.
No.
Yeah.
Do you know what kind of personality type?
Well, I'm type O.
Me too.
I'm an obliger.
An obliger.
Yeah.
All my favorite people are obligers. But you do a lot of work with your husband. You do a lot of creative work with him. You perform with him. Now, Elizabeth, I know you have a lot of thoughts about working with a spouse. Like, how did that go for you and Adam when you were working together?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to ask, because I met my husband. I'm a TV writer. I met him working on a show called The Shield, and it was great. But since then, I find when we try to work together, we sort of go from 0 to 10, you know, to anger very quickly because we're so close. Do you guys get into those sort of intense fights about the creative process, or are you just past it now because you've been doing it for so long?
Oh, no fights at all. No, we
never.
We definitely still fight. What we've learned is how to get over it much more quickly, and how to make it serve the work rather than it turn into pillow talk, you know, or turn into personal, like, you know, well, what do you mean you don't like that note I sang? You're so hurtful.
You always do this. You never do this.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, though, Elizabeth, because when you were on The Shield, you were more collaborating, and Roseanne and John are collaborating, and now you and Adam are in a position where you're sort of advising each other about your work that you're doing separately. I wonder if that's a different kind of dynamic. Maybe it would be better or worse, but it's just different.
Yeah, that's true. It's like I've put all this work into something, and then someone's coming in afterward, as opposed to you're creating it together. But does it bleed into, can you ever not talk about work, Roseanne? Or is it just, you love it and it's just what you do all the time?
Oh, sure. We talk about it a lot outside of the studio or outside of, you know, performance. But we also are interested in a lot of things, films and politics and, you know, books and our children. And yeah, we need to take breaks from it because it can be all consuming. I'm sure you found that as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And do you feel like that it also bolsters your creativity to have somebody right there you can be bouncing ideas off all the time? Or do you feel like that's something that almost has to be overcome to get stuff from the outside?
For me and John, he can be very hard on me. And not,
like high standards?
Yes, high standards hard, not punitive hard. And sometimes I want to get away from that and go to somebody who thinks I'm just great. Everything I do is great.
You're awesome.
You're so awesome. Yeah. Every word out of your mouth is just so awesome.
First take. There we go. We did it. Yeah.
Right. I mean, this is classic. Last year, I was doing a guest session on somebody else's album. And John, we were in Nashville, and it was this band, Hardworking Americans, and they asked me to sing on the song. So John just went with me to hang out. This is so unusual for John. He does not go hang out at other sessions. So he was sitting.
He's kind of a workaholic.
He is. So he was sitting in the other room, and I finished the session, and we left. He didn't say anything. I said, "So how'd you like it?" He goes, "I would have pushed you harder."
But in a way, that's a compliment too.
Yeah.
But it gets tiring.
It gets exhausting.
Yeah, well, and you guys travel so much. So how do you maintain your sanity, your creativity, a happy marriage, all that stuff while you're traveling so much?
Well, you know, we get to the point regularly where I say, I'm getting a separate room. I can't deal with you anymore. But never fails that once we get on stage and I see him play and I remember why I love him so much because I see his essence, that beauty and that art that comes out of him, and see him giving his best self to the audience and collaborating with other musicians in this really generous, and also he's a leader, you know, he's a musical director, so right. He has it together, he has the whole picture together. I see that, and like the rest of it just seems petty. It's like, why am I mad at him?
Right.
See who this person is?
Right.
I talked to Diana Krall about this because she's married to Elvis Costello, and I know very few women who are also married to other musicians. We talked about that, and she said, it's the same for me. I could be so angry with him, and I see him on stage, and I fall in love again. The spotlight burns it away.
Yeah.
Which is, you know,
which is interesting,
a metaphor, but
from the outside, you might think it would only intensify it. It's interesting that it's actually sort of a purifying intensity.
Well, a great performer, you know, the revelation that happens and the art and the mastery, they've been working for 35 years doing it, that's powerful. It's really powerful. It brings back the love.
So we have a segment on the podcast called Try This at Home, which is supposed to be a small, actionable thing that you can try at home that makes you happier, healthier, or more productive. So do you have a Try This at Home you would like to suggest?
I do. You know when you're working and these critical voices come up where you say, this is no good. Why am I doing this? I'll never be as good a songwriter as Bob Dylan. It's pointless.
I never have that particular thought.
But it's like, oh, yours is probably Tolstoy. I'll never write Anna Karenina. Why am I bothering? I did this once, and it was so helpful. I should do it again, actually. I drew them. I drew the voices.
Oh.
And they were really ugly little creatures, and then I drew like 10 of them, and I called them the committee, and I made a t-shirt.
You're kidding.
No, so there's a t-shirt called the committee with these ugly creatures on it, and when those voices come in to stop me, I just think of that and like, okay, you guys go to the end and I'll call you when I need to edit.
Right, hold your fire. That's so great though, because then you sort of externalize them and make them into this caricature of themselves.
Exactly.
And diffuse their power. Oh, brilliant. Well, thank you so much. That's a great Try This at Home.
My pleasure.
Okay, now this might be an impossible question to answer. Do you have a favorite song of your own? Like, is it like you cannot possibly pick because they're all so precious to you? Or is there one like deep in your heart you have to say because it was your first or your most recent or the most difficult or the easiest? Or
it's not static. And also because I've been doing it for over 35 years, it changes over time. It's like the songs.
Interesting. Okay.
The songs, I have relationships with songs. So the songs I wrote in my 20s and 30s, I'm not that woman anymore. But
so it's like your college perfume.
Yeah,
you still love it. But
I still love it. I appreciate it from a distance. And I go, oh, she was so young. How did she write that? So I love those songs in that way. And the more recent songs I'm invested in now.
Right.
And I know what the process of writing them. I remember the process of writing them. Some of the early ones, I don't even remember the process.
Right.
And that's precious to me. So, and also it depends on what mood I'm in.
Do you go back and listen to your old stuff?
Never.
Never.
Maybe once every 3 years I'll listen to something. I could never listen to a whole album.
Because it would just be so emotionally intense?
No, because I hear what I would do differently now.
Oh, right. So
it's like, oh, why did I have the drums up that loud? Why didn't I sing that note differently? You know, it's like endless. So I just don't even go there.
Right. But so if you have right now at this moment in your life, knowing that tomorrow you might make a completely different choice, is there a song that you would say kind of like is the one that's closest to your heart?
Right now it would be When the Master Calls the Roll from the newest record from The River and the Thread for a lot of reasons. One is that it was an incredibly intense process of writing it over a few months, and they were about characters outside myself, my own Civil War ancestors.
Right.
And those characters came alive, and I thought about them when I woke up, and I thought about them when I went to sleep. And I wrote it with my husband and my ex-husband, who's a great, great songwriter, Rodney Crowell. And it was sparked by Jake.
You're amazing.
My
son,
because they were doing, remember the kids did that Civil War project in eighth grade?
Yes.
And I said, do you know you have cash ancestors on both sides? And I went on the Civil War database to show him, and there was a picture of William Cash.
Wow.
And I called Rodney and I said, write some lyrics with me in the tradition of those great Appalachian narrative ballads.
Oh, right.
And then John had written this beautiful melody. So the way it all came together, and my daughter was involved peripherally too, because she had written a Civil War song. And I loved it, and I said, oh, I've always wanted to do that.
So it was sort of like your ancestors, your family, your divorced husband.
And then the most heightened experience of songwriting I've had, how visceral it was physically. You know, a lot of tears, a lot of dreams. It was just amazing.
Okay, well, now we have to take a second and listen to a bit of When the Master Calls the Roll.
So, Roseanne, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you, both of you. It's a pleasure.
So the open letter read, the newsboy did deliver. 3 months later, plans were made to wed down by the King James River. Lo, the season may come. Lo, the season may go.
And listen, if you didn't catch the names to everything we were talking about, don't worry. I'll put links to everything on my site, GretchenRubin.com. For each episode, I have a special post just for that episode. And so look for the post for episode 22.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive.
I know that when I've been hiring, it's really hard to do. It's really hard to find quality candidates. It's really hard to handle the process. Hiring is easy when you have lots of quality candidates, like with LinkedIn Jobs. It's so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/Gretchen. That's linkedin.com/Gretchen to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, Gretch, I know you have a creative happiness demerit.
Yeah, yes, I do. So something that I've written about several times on my blog and in my books is something that I call drift. And drift is the decision that you make by not deciding or by making a decision because it's just less hassle, because you don't want to get in a fight with somebody or because you can't be bothered to figure out what else you want to do. So you just drift into a decision. And I've written about it, and I actually gave a talk at something called 5x15. I gave a 15-minute talk about drift, which I worked really hard on that talk. And I'll post it if anybody wants to see it. And I also made a personal vow to myself that is whenever I speak to undergraduates or graduate students, I always talk about drift because I think it's a really, really, really important thing to think about if you're in school.
Yeah, you drifted into law school.
I drifted into law school and all the way through law school and 2 years out of law school. I am a major. Yes, I speak from the heart when it comes to drift because I experienced it. Everything worked out fine in the end, but often it does not. And drift, I fear drift because the word makes it sound like it's sort of easy and effortless, but actually you can work like a dog and be drifting. And so I keep thinking, and it comes up, like people will ask me about it, or, you know, how did you go from law to writing? And I keep thinking, I've done a lot of work on this, and I think it's something that's really important to me as a subject, and I should just turn it into something. We talk about finishers and openers, like I want to finish this, but somehow I just never make time for it. And I just recently did take a step where I found the text of the talk that I gave. You know, I sort of lost it in all the files of my computer as that happens. I found it. And And I keep thinking, oh, yeah, I got to. And I, what I should do is probably like take a week or something. I don't think it would even take that long, but I just need to focus on it. And so I give myself a demerit because this is something that's been sort of nagging at me creatively for years. And I think I would get a lot of satisfaction out of turning it into something. I don't even know what it should be. Should it be like a little PDF that people can print out? Should it be a little pamphlet? Should it be an article? I don't know, but I should do something with it. So that's my demerit, is I have this. This is string that has been saved, but that is just sitting around in the bottom of the box gathering lint. So that's my demerit. How about you? What's your gold star?
Okay. And I'm going to ask for an update on that in a few weeks.
Yeah, so maybe make it a couple months. I think I need, I still need some runway on that one, but I will get back to you.
Okay. Well, Gretchen, I have a gold star this week. I have to set it up a little bit. You know, in my job, I work in what we call the writer's room. So we go on a TV show and you always have a writer's room, and that's where the writers gather to come up with story ideas, and we figure out all the episodes, and it's really where we spend the majority of our time. And the writer's room can be a very happy place and it can be a very sad place. So it can be filled with laughter or tears, literally.
But also romance, right? Elizabeth, didn't you fall in love with Adam in the writer's room of the Shield?
That is absolutely true. Yeah. So romance is less common, but it does happen, as we are evidence of. Anyway, my gold star goes to the creator of the show I'm working on, which is called The Family. Her name's Jenna Bans, and she has just she's created a great atmosphere in the writer's room where I think she's really fostering everyone's creativity by having a place where you don't feel like everyone is going to jump on you or be really nasty about your ideas, which can happen. And so it's like you are free to have better ideas because you're free to have bad ideas. And I think that's important for the creative collaboration. If you can't sort of put yourself out there, then you're going to be safe and not take those creative risks, which always leads to the best material.
Right, you sort of enjoy the fun of failure.
Exactly, without feeling like you're judged every single second, or you're going to get fired or made fun of. So I just give her a big gold star for creating what I think is an incredibly productive, pleasant working atmosphere.
Well, so here's my question, though, Elizabeth. Gold star to her, because that is an accomplishment as a leader to create that. But given that you work in Hollywood where everybody wants everybody to be as creative as possible, why do you think that people don't seem to make more of an effort to create that kind of atmosphere? Because it sounds like it's pretty rare. Why just out of sheer self-interest and greed, why don't people work harder to make sure that they foster that kind of environment?
Well, you know, as writers, we're very insecure often. We live with a lot of anxiety. We tend to be neurotic. Some of us have huge overblown egos. So, you know, you bring all that and all these different types into a space, and it's sort of like it doesn't always bring out the best. And I'm sure a lot of creative situations are similar to that. And this is just the one I'm familiar with. But I don't want to say it's rare. I just want to say that it's not always a pleasant place.
And it's difficult to do, but it's great when it happens. So, yeah. Oh, yeah. Gold star. Gold star. And that's it for this episode of Happier. Remember, try this at home. Save your string. Let us know if you tried it and if it worked for you and what you did with your string. And also try Roseanne Cash's Try This at Home. Make a drawing of your committee and see if that helps you get them to be quiet and shut up in your head. And also check out Roseanne's latest album, The River and the Thread. And again, the name of her fantastic memoir is Composed.
Thanks to our producer, the very creative Henry Malofsky. Also, big thanks to Andy Bowers and Laura Mayer of Panoply, equally creative individuals. And if you want to make them really happy, fill out our survey, which is at panoply.fm/survey. Until next week, I'm Elizabeth Kraft.
And I'm Gretchen Rubin. Onwards and upwards.
This podcast is part of the Panoply Network. Check out our entire roster of podcasts at itunes.com/panoply. You act like you were just born tonight, face down.
pockets are full.